Assalamu alaikum, everyone. My name is Muhi Khwaja with the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast at American Muslim Community Foundation. And today, for Women's History Month, we have on Hasna Masnavi, who is the founder and president of the Women's Mosque of America. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Walaikum assalam. Of course, it's a real pleasure to be chatting with you. And to start out, we both have our cats roaming around.
Yes. Tina, I have Nina and Tina. Their real names are Nina bint Khadija and Tina bint Nina, but they're not related.
I love that. And, you know, tell everybody about yourself a little bit more about kind of like where you grew up, what you were into school, anything else you'd like to share professionally as well, just to give everyone a better sense of who you are.
Sure. So this is my least favorite part, talking about myself, but I know it's part of the job. We'll get into that later. But my name is Hasna Masnavi. I am the founder and president of the Women's Mosque of America. I actually did not set out to start a nonprofit. You know, I grew up in a very artistic family. My parents are from Sri Lanka, and I always tell people, you know, usually when people immigrate to the U.S., it's to escape war and poverty. When my parents immigrated to the U.S., it was for Elvis. So, you know, just to give you an idea. I grew up, you know, in a Muslim household. I had Quran tutors who would come to the house, and I learned how to pronounce the Arabic perfectly and have perfect Quranic, you know, recite in perfect tajweed. But it was only when I started to read the Quran in English for the first time as a teenager that I really fell in love with Islam, and I became very passionate about it. I was a little baby intern at CARE. And so this was right after 9/11. It happened when I was in 11th grade. And I saw how these images of Muslims and Islam in the media were directly translating into violent attacks, just like we're seeing right now, you know, that's happening with the Asian American community. And so I went to UC Berkeley for my undergrad, and I studied mass communications and art. And my goal was to study stereotypes and study how to break them down. And then after that, I went straight to USC Film School, and that's where I started to put everything that I had learned into practice. When I first applied to USC, I thought, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to film school. I'm gonna make all of these like serious films about like war and Palestine and all of this. And then I went to film school, and I found that the only thing I could write was comedy. And so I was like, okay, let me redirect here. I started getting into performing stand-up. And then soon enough, I started working as an independent comedy screenwriter. And I actually really embraced this. And I thought, you know, this is actually a really great way to present Islam and Muslims in a holistic, authentic light, because nobody likes to be preached at or talked down to or said, you know, told, you know, this is Islam and you should listen to us. So I actually found that it was the perfect medium for me to, again, represent Islam authentically. Or not just Islam, but Muslims as well. A few years into that, you know, I am this person who, wherever I go, I do have this pattern of creating safe spaces. So I run a halakha. I started like a Muslim women's fitness club. And so I have all of these sort of things going on. And so I thought, like, okay, I'm going to start this women's mosque. And I didn't think it was going to be a big deal at the time, because, as you know, women's mosques exist all over the world. But really, this turned into a really historic event that I didn't foresee, because it happened to be the first one in the US. And that also kind of coincides with a secret dream that I had. I had never told anyone about this, but when I was seven, I learned about the concept of sadaka jariya, which is the charity that keeps on giving even after you die. I think I had heard like Imam Siraj Wahaj come and talk at the mosque in Orange County. And so I was like, all right, you know, before I die, I'm going to build a mosque. And so
I love that.
I had been plotting and planning in the back of my mind, you know, whenever I would see something that I didn't like, or I saw something that I did like, I would be like, okay, in this dream mosque of mine, anytime they say an Arabic word, we're going to translate into English. Oh, in this dream mosque of mine, like I went to visit Iran, I was like, okay, we're going to have clay torbas for the Shia congregants. And so I was always collecting these ideas. And it was only in the last few years, right before I launched the mosque, that the women's element was kind of the cherry on top. And so the way that I like to characterize this mosque is a dream mosque from the perspective of a woman. So it really is much bigger than just about women. Really, the vision is that, you know, the Muslim Ummah has this huge untapped population of talent. You know, Muslim women, American Muslim women, are the second highest educated female religious demographic in the country. But when you step into our mosque, you don't see this talent leading the Ummah. And so it really was, you know, the combination of these two things of, you know, this dream mosque that I had, I was building up, and I also had this, you know, idea of like, oh yeah, I'm going to make it really big in Hollywood, and then I'm going to use all that money to build a mosque. And then I made the mistake of flipping it. I still haven't made those big bucks in Hollywood. I still have a little ways to go there, but inshallah, it's still possible. We'll see. But yeah, I did start it, you know, in reverse order, and we launched, and we had a huge, you know, outpouring of support from men and women, from imams, from really everyone. And really, I think the thing that I want to get across, and this is maybe I'm skipping a step. One of the things that really struck me when we launched was just the way that the media was misportraying our message. So, you know, I was seeing headlines saying like, oh, Muslim women fight back and start a mosque of their own. I was like, I'm not fighting anybody. I don't know who you're talking about, but it's not me. And I saw the way that, like, you know, here I am, someone who has studied media, and I'm finally getting, I have studied stereotypes, and I'm finally getting handed the mic. And then these reporters are taking 10 seconds of what I said and constructing this entirely different story to fit their agenda for a sensationalized story. And this had a little bit of an impact on just our outreach within the Muslim community, where there were a lot of misunderstandings where people thought like, oh, you know, they're rejecting mosques. And it really was never that at all. Our biggest value is the middle ground value. And so because of this, we have built a space where we are in everything that we do, we always want to consider, you know, do conservative Muslims feel comfortable with this? Do liberal Muslims feel comfortable with this? How can we do everything that we do in a way that is respectful of all viewpoints without ever straying from the teachings of Orthodox Islam? And so everything that we do, even the fact that we are a women's only mosque, that is to be inclusive of conservative Muslims who might not be comfortable with, you know, co-ed jummas led by women, but women-led jummas just for women and children are, you know, deemed permissible within conservative circles. So that's the message that, you know, I've been trying to get across, you know, and we did have a bit of some PR damage in the beginning, but I really want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to really share what we are about, you know, from my own words. So thank you again for inviting me here.
Yeah, of course. You know, we want to be able to have nonprofits tell their own stories, and those leaders who are part of them be able to share the ins and outs of what it was like to start those organizations, and really help the community learn from the best practices, from the mistakes, from the journey, all of it. So why don't we chat a little bit about some of the programs and services. You know, you alluded to there being Friday prayers, but and that you personally were leading some halakhas and other things like that. But what are some of those mainstay programs? And also, if you can share what year the mosque was formed as well.
Yeah, so we launched our very first Jummah in January of 2015, and we just had our 6-year anniversary. Right now, because of the pandemic, we're doing online Jummah services once a month. And the reason for this is, you know, in the same way that, you know, a women's college is not competing with other colleges, we see ourselves as a way to enhance the ummah and to uplift the entire ummah by empowering Muslim women. So they come to our services once a month, and then they go back to their, you know, more traditional spaces, co-ed spaces, more empowered. And it's also everyone's first time giving a khutbah, you know, delivering the adhan. So there is a lot of training that goes into that program. We also usually, pre-pandemic, we would always have a co-ed Ramadan iftar. Right now, we're taking a break from that. And last year we did daily videos. This year, inshallah, we're going to have a series on famous historical Muslim women, just, you know, bite-sized videos every day of Ramadan.
Love that.
And yeah, and really the biggest program that we want to launch is our Quran literacy program. And so, you know, as I told you in my story, knowing what was in the Quran and also knowing what was not in the Quran and what was being told to me, you know, from culture or from, you know, somebody's, you know, baggage, or you never know what people are going through, you know, what hadith they latch onto to fit their agenda. But really, the most empowering thing I ever did in my life was read the Quran in English from cover to cover as a teenager. And that is what we really want to lead people through. And so right now we are, you know, fundraising to hire new team members and inshallah launch that program in the future.
That's really exciting. And, you know, I've been able to chat with some other female leaders from institutions like Rabata and mm-hmm. other places that are doing education and outreach specific to women. And I think it's such a vital program that all of the organizations are offering. I, of course, am one for like collaboration always. So, you know, whether it's like Muslim Women in Tech or Rabatha or Women's Mosque of America, mm-hmm. I think that there's so much opportunity to collaborate and cross promote services in those circles. So it'd be really great to, you know, as each of those are organizations that are part of AMCF's network, we always want to promote cross collaboration in those spaces as well.
Yeah, that would be great, inshallah.
Cool. So you mentioned, you know, you're looking to hire some staff, fundraise, all of those things. These are common challenges that nonprofits face. So kind of in your 6-year journey so far, what are some of those things that, you know, have been challenging for you and how your team has worked around it? Because obviously, you know, as one person, you can only do so much, but I'm sure you have a board, you have volunteers, you have staff. So what are the ways in which the organization has kind of coalesced and kind of come together to provide all of these services?
Yeah, you know, I had a huge learning curve in starting this organization. And I really think everybody at one point in their life should start a business or a nonprofit, because you will learn so much about yourself. For me, I really feel like, or what I finally, you know, have come to the conclusion of is that when you start an organization, not only are you instituting your dream and your strengths and your vision, but you're also instituting your flaws. And you will have to face, you will have to face your flaws on a huge level. And I, you know, I had to learn a lot. And so, for example, one of the things, one of the flaws that I had before, and you know what, before starting the Women's Mosque, I do remember making a dua, please God, fix me in all the ways I need to be fixed.
Yes.
I should have said gently. Because I got fixed, but it was definitely a process. And so, for example, I used to have typical starving artist beliefs about money. I thought, you know, I don't want money. Money is evil. I only want as much money as I just need. I don't spend anything. I only spend on charity and like medical supplies, and that's it. And in starting a nonprofit, you quickly realize like, oh, I wanted to fund the whole mosque myself. I didn't even want to ask for donations in the beginning.
Sure.
And I had to learn like, no, that this is the dunya. The dunya is imperfect. You know, we're not living amongst angels and in heaven. Like there are realities, and money is not evil. Money is just another resource, just like the sun and water. There's nothing inherently evil about it. And so, you know, that I think was probably the biggest learning curve for me. Also, just learning how to be more assertive, learning how to have really strong boundaries, especially, you know, with the so-called fame element. I always like to joke that, like, you know, I went through everything that celebrities go through without the fame and fortune, like, you know, like with just being in the news and like people, you know, all over the world talking about you and like people coming out of the woodwork pretending like they know you and like just rumors flying and all of this. I just really had to get super firm about my boundaries and learn how to say no and put my foot down. And that's something that I'm still, you know, struggling with and still growing with. But alhamdulillah, I've come a long way. And yeah, you know, I feel like as you as a leader grow, the organization also reflects that growth. And so I do feel like now, alhamdulillah, we're at a better stage in that, you know, we can see the future, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, in the beginning, there was just so much, you know, so much in the media, so much from other organizations, there was just a lot of dust that had to be settled. And so now we are in, also because of the pandemic, now we've had this sort of rest period to catch up on the work that we were behind on and inshallah move forward, hire new help and get the support that we need.
That's great. And, you know, as you have the rest of 2021, you know, you're going to be doing this educational series about women in Islam, the program for Quran and other efforts. What is it about that, and kind of like, you know, we can mix in Women's History Month and kind of like what it means to you, but like providing these services, why is it so critical?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's more about like we as Muslims have been given this beautiful, incredible gem of Islam. And it's, to me, it's just such a loss that so many people in our community are disconnected from the words of God. They've never read the Quran. They've just memorized sounds. They've memorized songs. And they're not on a daily basis infusing themselves with the motivation, the inspiration. You know, I really think that it's impossible to read the Quran and not be changed. And so it's really not just about Muslims. It's really about the world. You know, look around us. Everybody is depressed. Everybody is like feeling, you know, disconnected. People aren't, you know, people have no sense of purpose in their life. And these are all problems that Islam maybe not fixes, but definitely helps. And the Quran definitely helps. And so for me, you know, it's just a sense of like, I want to see people happy. And here is this thing that has provided me with so much happiness in my life. Like, how could I not share that gift with people, especially seeing how much suffering there is in the world and within the Muslim community?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. When it comes to the organization overall, for Women's Mosque of America and kind of the impact that you've been able to make in Southern California, in LA, and now virtually through your monthly programs, you know, what are some things that you hope other communities learn from and take advantage of? Because, you know, you talked about how you want to strengthen the Muslim women in the community so that when they go back to co-ed spaces within the Muslim community, they're stronger themselves, right? So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the hallmarks of our khutbas is really the vulnerability element and just involving the first person experience. So, for example, this month on March 26th, inshallah, we are having a khutbah and a pre-khutbah bayan. So that's a way to be inclusive of, you know, people with different opinions on women-led jummas. So our topic is going to be on leaning on Islam to navigate pregnancy loss and abortion. And this is going to be told from the firsthand experience of Sahar Pirzada, who is works with Heart Women and Girls. And Nadia, the co-founder, is going to be giving the short clip afterwards. And so when we see women able to talk about issues from their own personal experience, also factoring in, you know, the scholarly background and what Islam, what Islam actually teaches, it really opens up a more compassionate Islam for everyone. And, you know, when we are seeing so many children being turned away and feeling like they're not welcome in mosques, and not just children, there are a lot of women who've come to our services and have said, you know, this is the first time I'm coming back to a mosque in 2 decades. I was kicked out of a mosque for not wearing a scarf for this or for that. You know, being able to come into our space and truly connect to the words of God and also hear your own experience reflected back to you from someone who has lived that experience, I think is really powerful, not just for the women, but for everyone who's listening. A man can talk about it, but unless he's actually experienced something like that, he can't truly empathize in a way that a woman can. So, in that way, I do see that we are having an impact just in terms of highlighting mental health in the Muslim Ummah, raising women's voices and their lived experiences, presenting a more compassionate view of Islam. There are 99 names of God that we know of, right? And in every single chapter of the Quran, except for one, 113 chapters all start with Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim, the most merciful, the most compassionate. And so this is what we are trying to infuse back into the Ummah. And it starts with providing this space for women and children, and inshallah we have a ripple effect out onto the larger community.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Heart Women and Girls is also another charity that is in the AMCF nonprofit directory, along with Women's Mosque of America and so many other fantastic organizations. They're also charities that AMCF is highlighting for Women's History Month. So we're so fortunate to have Husna chatting with us about Women's Mosque of America during this month. And we're highlighting about 19 different charities throughout the entire month of March. Not all of them are making it onto the podcast just to scheduling issues, but we're really fortunate for you taking the time to chat with us. And everybody can find out more about the Women's Mosque on their Instagram, which is just Women's Mosque, or their website, womensmosque.org. You can also take a look at AMCF's Instagram to see all the different organizations we're highlighting throughout the month. Husna, for organizations or people interested in kind of learning more about you and your favorite charities that you like to support, we always like asking the guests to share their three favorite charities that they give their zakat or sadaqah to.
Sure. So I'm kind of old school. I'm still stuck in the 90s, so I still really love CARE. I love Islamic Relief. And actually a newer one is Penny Appeal. Is that what it's called? Yeah, Penny Appeal.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna cheat and give for Kinder USA as well.
Awesome. And all those orgs, again, you can see that more information on our nonprofit directory. If you want a nonprofit to be listed in our directory, they just need to fill out an eligibility form. We do this podcast and have the directory to boost voices of other nonprofit organizations. So again, helping the donor ecosystem and the nonprofit ecosystem overall. Is there anything else that you'd like to share about just kind of your nonprofit startup journey? And kind of advice that you have for others. I know you're encouraging people to either start up a nonprofit or a business and just to have that experience. So what are some of the things that you valued through this experience?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as a last piece of advice, I would just say to take breaks. That was another place I needed to be fixed. You have to, as the saying goes, you can't give from an empty cup. You have to take breaks. You have to do things that give you energy so that you have the energy to give. That's not
Right.
just financially, but also, socially with friends. For me, I love going to the beach, going surfing, running, having fun, taking breaks, and spending that time on yourself and self-care, so that you can give, and you can give long term.
For sure, that emotional recharge is always so important. So, you know, whether it's going on a hike or a bike ride or whatever you do to be with yourself, and that way you can, like you said, give back to others. Hasna, this has been a really enjoying conversation for me to learn more about you personally and just the journey of the Women's Mosque in America. So thank you so much for telling the story, and best of luck to make it big in Hollywood so that you can self fund the rest of your dreams, and we'll be rooting you on.
Thank you, thank you, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Of course, happy to help. Well, I can sound.